How will inflation affect my kids?
Google products are designed to prioritize quality information, so you can find news you can trust. Learn how Google supports news in Canada at g.co/news in Canada.
Hey, welcome back. It is Mark Tui and Deb Hutton in for Rashmi and Scott today. They'll be back Monday. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk with Ontario Education Minister Stephen Lecce and get the he said to the she said that we had earlier in the show. We spoke with the president of the union that is or is not threatening to go on strike. We'll get his side of that story a little bit after 5. But right now, it's just after 4:30, and that means it's time for Smart Speakers, where we're joined by two of Toronto's best and brightest to dive into the biggest stories of the day.
Here we go.
Hey, now.
The Rush with Rashmi Nair and Scott MacArthur.
This is Smart Speakers on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
And our smart speakers for this beautiful Friday afternoon are Chris Chapin, partner at Upstream Strategy, and Amy Archibald Varley, a registered nurse in the Hamilton Niagara region and co-host of the Gritty Nurse podcast. Welcome to The Rush this afternoon.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
So earlier today, our premier had a little run-in with a piece of nature. Let's hear what happened.
Government per se, but the holy Christ. I just swallowed a bee.
Oh, my.
Holy Christ. I knew that little bugger. Wow. I'm good. He's down here buzzing around right now. He has a lot of real estate. Now, if that was in the clip, okay, this is going to be replayed over and over again. And that just made Colin DeMello's day. He's going to be laughing all the way back to the city.
I got to say, I've been laughing about this all afternoon. Chris, what's your take on how the premier handled this one?
I can't imagine how you could handle a situation like that so well. It's political communication genius. You could never prep it in any kind of media preparation. And I watched that clip over and over again all day, and it's made a rather happy Friday because it's just so funny to watch.
Amy Archibald Varley, this is, I think, what people love most.
This is a classic, okay?
I think this is what people love about Doug Ford. The people who love him because he reacts like they hope they might have reacted. What's your side of this?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know if I'd say that I love him, but I have to say that the reactions, the memes, the clips that I've been seeing have been fulfilling my every needs for Friday. It's just been wild out there. And I mean, yeah, again, there's no best way to react. He reacted the way that I think most folks would have reacted to a bee flying into your mouth. But you know what? Yeah, I think we're going to be hearing about this bee sting. There's going to be a lot of buzz about it over the next couple of weeks.
There you go, Amy.
Sorry, I had to throw the dad joke.
Well done.
I see what you did there.
That's great. Another Ontario story, not as laughable for parents and students in this province, is Mark has been calling it the he said, she said of our education discussions with the unions today. In particular, we had Laura Walton, president of CUPE's Ontario School Board Council of Unions, on this afternoon. She represents about 55,000 workers. These are librarians, janitors, some educational workers, ECEs, number of others. 55,000. We had read in the Toronto Sun that a memo had gone out to their membership suggesting that the local representatives needed to take a strike vote in anticipation of obviously putting pressure on the government during their negotiations. When we had Laura Walton on, let's hear what she had to say to that.
Contrary to Mr. Lilly's report, we have not asked locals to hold strike votes by August 22nd. In fact, we're holding a leadership meeting on August 20th and 21st, and then doing a meeting that members can participate in where we can update them on what's happening with bargaining and talk about where we may need to go in the future. At this time, there has been no strike vote called. All of our information is open and public.
Yeah, so that was her saying no, but, I tried to follow up with that, and we're not going to play the audio of it, but I sort of said, are we parsing words here? Because the strike vote isn't going to happen. That wasn't the suggestion that was going to be the... Anyway, I still don't know what's going to happen. Chris Chapin, I'm tired as a parent. I don't have kids anymore in the system, and thank God for that. But I'm just tired of the same old merry-go-round where every year, nonstop, the unions say this, the government says that, the government government smashes the unions smash the government. I want off the ride already.
I mean, it seems to be, like you said, Mark, every single bargaining cycle, we go through the exact same pattern. I think in this case, I have a fair bit of faith in Brian Lilly's reporting that the email did go out the way it did, and what it said probably said exactly what he reported on. I think this is the same tactic every single time any of the teachers' unions or any of the assistant unions put themselves into a strike position. I think it's sad. I think I truly believe we should have made teachers an essential service a long time ago so we could have avoided these strikes. I think it's unfair to put parents and children in between the government negotiations. I understand there's the fiscal concern about that and whether that means, you know, forced arbitration. But I think at the end of the day, I think it's ridiculous. I think it's the same thing every single time. The unions always try to say it's anything but money, but it always comes down to money solving the problem. And I wish if that was the case, let's at least figure out a system to put into place so that kids aren't held hostage in the middle of it.
I'm just going to follow up a little bit with you on that, Chris. I mean, do you think the government ever would take us down the path of taking away the right to strike, this government?
Well, I mean, it depends. Premier Ford certainly made, you know, significant overtures to the trade unions and their ability to collectively bargain. But I mean, there's certainly a big difference, as you know, Deb, between the trade unions as, you know, far less of an essential service than teachers are, and their teachers unions would probably freak out. I mean, I remember, and as well as you would know, you know, this has happened to parties of all stripes. It happens to the Liberals. It happened to the PCs back before Dalton McGuinty with Mike Harris and Ernie Eves. It's just been a never-ending cycle. It doesn't seem to matter who's in power. The unions do this every single bargaining cycle, and I just wish we'd come up with some kind of a solution to fix this, and I do think making them an essential service is exactly that.
Amy Archibald Varley, I think Chris is right. I mean, the unions, teachers' unions and education unions and unions, they've gone after the conservatives. They've gone after conservative governments. They've gone after liberal governments. They've gone after NDP governments. They just don't get along. And I understand the essential adversarial process here is taking away the right to strike, making educators and the people who support them and essential workers. Is that the answer?
You know, honestly, I don't know the best answer to that, but I do know that we need to be very careful with our reporting. So it's not teachers' unions. It is the support staff, as you mentioned before. So like cleaners, janitors, EAs, educational assistants, et cetera, right? And I mean, I'm very concerned because, you know, look at where nurses are in terms of us trying to advocate for our rights. And we can't strike because we're considered an essential service. So I'd be very cautious about what, you know, these groups really, really need. I do understand. And I have skin in the game too, because I've got three kids that are in the education system. I've got kids that are going into, I believe it's grade, I should know this, grade four and grade two. I should know, right? And, you know, again, when I mean I have skin in the game, I have a son who needs an educational assistant. So I've seen the hard work that goes into having that additional support for him. So my son has autism and he does need that additional support. And that support helps him be able to learn, helps him thrive in the school system, helps him not be left behind like other folks might be. So I see them as very essential. But again, I do question the fact that some of these folks make something like $36,000 a year. I mean, we need to be looking at what better supports can we put in place for these workers, because honestly, they are doing the Lord's work at this point in time.
So one of the points I like to make on that last point you made, Amy, is that they make that amount of money because they work 10 months of the year by choice, that they are not full-time, 8 hours a day, 52 weeks of the year employees. They do work by the hour. So it's not fair to compare that wage to someone's wage who works what you would call full-time.
Yeah, I would say, have you been in a situation where you're working with a student with a disability, right? I think that we just need to be very careful about how we pay people, how we respect folks. So I understand, yeah, they don't work for 10 months out of the year. But for example, the work, you can't put a price tag on the work and the essential work that these folks do with folks that have disabilities that are in these positions. And I think that we just need to think about what is fair compensation? Is it fair compensation? And then just, you know, continue to ask questions. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking questions. And I think, again, like I said, I have skin in the game. I have a son that needs an educational assistant. I've seen how devastating it is when he doesn't have, because of course we've been in situations where they have striked. But again, I am trying to be cognizant of why they might be striking as well.
This is Mark Tuohy and Deb Hutton in for Scott MacArthur and Reshmi Nair. We are here till 6 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up in just about 15 minutes time, Stephen Lecce, Minister of Education, is going to join us. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about education between now and then. And we'll do that with our smart speakers this afternoon. Chris Chapin, partner at Upstream Strategy. Chris, I have trouble with that every time I say it. And Amy Archibald Varley, a registered nurse in the Hamilton Niagara region and co-host of The Gritty Nurse.
Hey, we were following, I just want to follow up the conversation we had before the break. We were talking a little bit about the what I described as he said, she said between the education minister and the president of QP union that represents the educational support workers, the administrative staff, the custodial staff, a lot of those type of people in the education system. And my sort of larger scale concern was, how do we get off this merry-go-round where we start, you know, one after another, these dominoes start falling into place with different labor organizations negotiating different contracts. There seems to me, Chris Chapin, to be far too many chefs in the kitchen. And I'm wondering, you know, maybe making education workers an essential service and taking away their right to strike is part of it. But why? We've got ministers that have to be involved in this, and the ministry has a role. Every board, and there are far too many of them, has a voice in all of the negotiations. Every union, and there's so many of them, has a voice in this. Are there too many players in this? Could we streamline this somehow and take some of these people off the table and just amalgamate similar interests and so they could bargain together?
It's an interesting question, Mark. I've had this conversation a lot. My father was in education for 30, 35 years at different levels and into the board. And his suggestion always is the exact opposite, that the best thing they could do is break them up even more. That there's, you know, the needs that reflect Toronto teachers are nowhere near in terms of cost of living the same as parts of rural Ontario. His suggestion was always that it was always much better. Frankly, not something Deb's going to want to hear, but he always found pre-amalgamation, even in Toronto, the school boards ran better because they were allowed to be a bit more nimble and their ability to run based off of what the local needs were in Etobicoke versus North York just helps them operate a better run school board. So I actually, you know, I trust him on that more than I trust most people in education. And I actually think it might be better off if we weren't always held hostage by these big players. And I think making them even bigger might create the problem even worse.
Amy, what's your perspective on that? Because, you know, I think part of the issue and why the potential QP strike that we've been talking about this afternoon is so important is because it is the first of the educational dominoes to go. And usually whatever the first round gets, the rest get that or more.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I always kind of try to think back to like why unions are put in place, and I get what you're saying. Like, I get what everyone's saying in terms of the back and forth, but again, just trying to think why we have unions in place, and it's really to also protect the workers too, to protect them from exploitation, to make sure that they have adequate pay, benefits, security, and I do understand the fear of, you know, our kids not getting what they need. I get that because I have three kids, like I said at the beginning of the segment as well. But I just want to make sure that they are getting what they need too. Because, for example, my kids, of course, because of the pandemic, my kids were put back. I didn't even realize that within the education system, there was some incentive that I could have sent them for extra training. Like, I think we just have to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And it sounds to me that they are still in talks. They are still negotiating. So maybe we just need to be a little bit more patient to see what the outcome actually is.
Yeah, I mean, I was struck by our conversation a bit earlier, Amy, because I also have a child who has some special needs. And the most important thing for me is to have that kid in the class, because for those kids in particular, not having access to the social environment, not having that routine is very, very difficult on those kids.
I agree. And I kind of have the same philosophy of like happy wife, happy life, or whatever the case may be. And if we don't have happy workers, we're not going to have happy productive workers either. So I've seen the situations where, you know, my EA has been with my son or my sons at any given time. And I've seen if they're struggling, they're not happy with their situation, they're not really happy and producing the same way and giving the same results to my child. And I think that's the same with any profession. So nursing has unions too, and you're seeing the struggle there as well. And I think that we need to make sure we meet people where they're at. We have to hear what the concerns are, respond to them respectfully and kind of take it from there. I agree with you that absolutely our kids should be in school 110%. But I also think that we need to be mindful of what pressures or what things are changing that are making, you know, workers think about having these types of conversations. And again, like they said, just at the top, it is a conversation, and I think we just need to see what the outcome is.
Chris Chapin, most of the vehicles that are used to chauffeur around Canada's cabinet members and deputy ministers are not made in Canada. I don't care. Should we care? Should they be made in Canada?
I mean, I don't particularly care. I suppose symbolically, if we're telling Canadians to buy Canadian cars, it's one of those things that our politicians should lead by example. But I don't really care. I think it's overblown. I just, like most things, when we focus on like the little nitty gritty things about politicians, I think it's overblown.
So, Amy, I'm of the view lead by example, and I think that this is something that the government should do for at least its cabinet ministers. When you say 7 out of 29 were not Canadian made, sorry, the opposite, only 7 out of 29 were right. Canadian made, I don't think that's leadership by example on this issue. This isn't a massive issue, but I do think it is symbolic, and Mark said earlier, a lot of leadership is symbolism.
I agree that there is that symbolism in leadership. Again, I don't know if this is a really important speaking point. I don't particularly care, but I do understand and appreciate the importance of symbolism and making sure that you are, you know, you practice what you preach. And again, I think when it comes to government, it is a very fickle type of conversation. And but again, with these cars, I don't know if they're really moving me to have too much conversation in relation to it, to be honest. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
And that's, we've got just enough time. We're going to talk little bit later about whether Mark Tui can live life without a car. So just quick hits from Chris Chapin and Amy Archibald-Varley. Do either of you live without a car? Could you live without a car? Chris?
I don't. I don't live without a car, and I can't imagine. I had been living without a car pre-pandemic and had to get one when everything shut down, and I can't imagine going back without one.
Yeah, I think it depends where you live. I think most folks that are in the GTA, so like my cousin, he lives in downtown Toronto, he's a nurse, and he does not have a car, and he gets everywhere he needs to go without it. I live in Hamilton. I live in kind of a little bit in the sticks. I need a vehicle. I need to get around.
Chris Chapin, partner at Upstream Strategy, and Amy Archibald-Varley, a registered nurse with Hamilton Niagara Region and co-host of the Gritty Nurse Podcast. We thank you for your joining us as our smart speakers today. It's Mark Tui and Deb Hutton in for Rashmi and Scott on The Rush. Stick around. Coming up after the news, we're going to sit down with Ontario's Minister of Education, Stephen Lecce, and get his take on who is fear-mongering whom and whether or not your kids will be in school all through September. That's coming up next when The Rush returns right here on Newstalk 1010. Don't go anywhere.
What summer festivals are on now? Google helps you find the news that matters most to you. Whether you're looking for news from international publications or your local paper, learn how Google supports news in Canada at g.co/newsincanada.